Welcome to Mowate Talks, Business Insights Unplugged. Join us as we share insights and perspectives from technology and operations leaders, industry analysts, and visionaries on how today's technology trends are transforming their businesses and communities. Sit back and enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to Mowate Talks, Business Insights Unplugged. I'm Syriac Joswin, Senior Vice President and Head of Markets for Mowate, your podcast host for the day. Today, I'm excited to have a very special guest and a good friend of mine, Nick Doulis, with me. Nick is the Senior Vice President of Engineering at Pangea Money Transfer. And with over three decades of experience in diverse technology domains, Nick has been at the forefront of innovation and leadership, driving significant advancements in engineering and product development. Nick, it's fantastic to have you as our guest today.
Thanks. Great to be here, Syriac. Nice to chat.
Thank you. Nick, I'd like to start by talking about your journey, right? You started your career with Motorola for about 16 years, and you were part of a founding team before you landed at Pangea. Walk us through about your journey. How did that pan out?
Yeah, it's been fun. Definitely a few interesting chapters, you know, that I think you just highlighted. Spent a good part of my early career at Motorola through the sort of late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, you talk about sort of technology and industry trends, you know, really the chapter I would associate that with is really the invention and the rise of the mobile internet, you know, which something we very much take for granted now, but that was really, you know, that era as it sort of got into smartphones and so on. And, you know, at that point, you know, next chapter for me that was most exciting was to then, you know, try to venture off into something small and take advantage of, you know, some of the new emerging technology. I started with a few friends, created a small startup business called Perseo that we targeted sort of the mobile marketing space, you know, which was a very new thing at the time. This is all just as the iPhone was coming out, you know, so there were exciting times there, just kind of riding a new wave of mobile internet at the time. Again, something we take for granted now. And, you know, that took that up to a certain point, learned a lot of, you know, interesting lessons and everything, comparing and contrasting that to, you know, working at a much larger, more established company like Motorola. You know, took that up to a certain point. Then kind of a interesting next chapter for me was moving to Pangea Money Transfer about 6 years ago. This was something that was new to me at the time, you know, financial services, fintech. Again, just sort of as that was, you know, to be considered at kind of its early stages, to see where that's come to today, you know, it's pretty wild ride. And I think it's got a much longer path to go, you know, in terms of how useful and ubiquitous that has become in all our lives. So it's been fun.
No, interesting. And Nick, while you were explaining your engineering growth, your entrepreneurial pivot, and then this whole fintech, right? So there's a convergence of domain, there's a convergence of that entrepreneurial mindset, and then you're obviously engineering background. I'm curious to know, has any of this changed in the last 10, 15 years? Clearly, we know that the shelf life of a product has reduced, right? So that's one thing. Definitely, I'm sure the audience is aware. But what has changed in terms of product development, in terms of engineering, in terms of the domain? What has changed?
Yeah, I think time to market, I think, has dramatically changed. And I think a lot of that is due to just the building blocks you can build on today versus what you built on, you know, 20 years ago, for example. I think, you know, we're all, you know, as humans and as a civilization, we're all riding on the shoulders of, you know, everyone who came before us. And I think that now the pace of that innovation, I think the last, you know, generation, I think has really picked up. You look at the things you do to start a business, to build a new product today compared to 10 or 20 years ago. You know, you had to do so many things yourself, from you had to take on so many competencies yourself, whereas, you know, now teams are very much empowered and enabled to create kind of their unique value add, you know, on top of an ecosystem that already exists or services they can outsource, you know, so that they can really just focus on the core parts of what you needed to do. You know, starting a business now or starting one 10 years ago versus 20 or 30 years ago was a dramatically different, you know, how much you needed to get off the ground. I think, you know, another key advancement in that is everything you've seen around, you know, cloud computing and all kinds of fundamental services you can, you know, anything you can think of as a service, you know, exists today. And this, you know, it's been great for the innovators in those spaces, you know, so that they can focus on their core competencies, but then also it enables, you know, these fundamental building blocks that people can build on to do, you know, new and exciting things.
Yeah, yeah. You started saying time to market, right? And I think it's an important change, because I think the biggest influence in that is the customers, right? The consumers have become more and more savvy. Their behavior is with the obviously information everywhere. You know, they know what they want, right? The question I have, and I'm sure the viewers are thinking, is how are you looping in that consumer behavior, that consumer feedback into your life cycle, product life cycle, development life cycle? And is there any example you want to talk to us at Pangea where you were able to successfully, you know, influence the development of a feature of something like that based on consumer behavior, based on consumer ask, if you will?
Well, I think you see this play out in a few different ways. You can see it very directly in terms of, you know, if you're building a product, if you're building a consumer-based product, you typically have all kinds of, you know, analytics you use yourself for your team so that you can observe how your customers, how your users, you know, how people use your product. Other things you can augment that, obviously, with, you know, focus groups and studies, research studies, and so on. But I think the other important thing we all see ourselves, and we know that our customers see as well, is, you know, there's a wide universe of other either directly competing services or similar services that all of us collectively draw on from each other, because we know that that sets consumer expectation, right? So if, you know, if I'm building a financial services app and I'm comparing it to, say, the way a McDonald's app works, okay, I'm not competing with the McDonald's app, but consumers use that app all the time. And that is just one data point that formulates their expectations of how services work. So once consumers learn certain behaviors, they then start to train themselves on it, and they take certain things for granted in terms of, you know, what is considered intuitive user interface, what is considered reasonable expectations of how a product or a service should work. You know, this is something that consumers, you know, people, we all learn this from the collective of so many different products and services that we interact with today, formulate sort of that foundation. And I think anytime you build something new, you always have to be cognizant of that, to recognize that, like, there's an established set of patterns out there that people, right or wrong, so, you know, so sometimes people learn things, you know, that are not good, but right or wrong, there's a baseline set of patterns that people are accustomed to. And you want to, obviously, if you need to deviate from that because you're doing something very fundamentally different, you might need to do that. But for the most part, you typically don't want to do that. You have a set of expectations that exist in the market, and you want to leverage those as much as possible, especially if you're dealing with issues of trust and security, right? So in particular in financial services, trust, you know, security are huge. So, you know, you can debate all day long that you've developed a more secure way to do something, or you can follow the patterns that are already there that people are accustomed to, that people will inherently trust more than something that they need to be convinced is better.
True. And knowing you and how you sort of give a lot of importance to security, trust, and in the domain where you play. But I think even more important, how you understand and you drive customer sentiment within your organization. The next question would be around how are you able to stitch that, both in terms of expectations and security is a very big play, as we all know, especially in the fintech world. How are you adapting the new age technology? And we'll get into Gen AI in a minute, but nevertheless, technology is advancing. You mentioned about cloud computing a little while earlier, right? Technology is advancing at a very, very fast pace. How are you incorporating that in your team? How do you set aside innovation time? How does a day in life of Nick and his team play out with exploring different technologies?
Yeah, I think in particular, we like to be very careful with sort of where we want to innovate and where we don't. I think at times it's very easy for people to choose things that seem intellectually interesting and decide they want to go innovate there. So I'll give you an example. Cloud computing is very central to what we do. And, you know, we happen to use AWS, but same story applies to, you know, all the other major providers as well, whereby there's a giant diverse set of services that are available, you know, in a platform that could be utilized, you know, to build products. I still remember sort of early days of AWS, the services were super minimal. And anytime they came out with some new service you could take advantage of, you usually wanted to take advantage of it because they were usually solving some major problem that you were left to solve yourself. Today, that landscape has matured to such a degree that it's more of an exercise in discipline of being judicious about which of those services you want to use. Using too many services actually makes your team less productive, right? Because now, you know, you dabble in a lot of different things and you don't get good at any of them. There's certain spaces, like for example, in the platform and infrastructure side where we're trying to not innovate. We're trying to, like, you know, very carefully, you know, curate a set of technologies that are, you know, really core to what we do and stay disciplined and focused around those and get really good at those and make sure that those, you know, serve the needs of what we want to accomplish. And then, you know, turn some of that creative energy to other places that have, you know, a bigger influence on our business. Because no one wants to do innovation for innovation's sake. You know, it's always more rewarding and more impactful when you actually tie that to some sort of business outcome. So, you know, for us, for what we do, you know, we help people move money across borders. We help at the end of the day, it's a consumer business. It's a person-to-person business. People are sending money to each other. What's most important for us is, you know, what we like to simplify as sort of simple, fast, and free is what consumers are used to. You know, going back to what we just said a minute ago, people, you know, understand certain patterns and certain expectations of how the market works in general. People have collectively come to form those expectations, you know, of how they send money to each other. You see that play out, for example, with a service like Venmo, where it's you know, very simple, immediate, and it's, you know, for the most part, free. There, you know, those are the drivers of what really moves our business forward. And that's where we want to innovate. You know, how can we make our service better, simpler, more efficient in terms of how our customers interact with it on a daily basis? But then, you know, also how, you know, pricing is really key in our industry. We want to make things as fair and transparent and as low cost as possible for people, you know, but we also need to make a healthy business out of the whole endeavor. And so that, you know, for example, pricing is a very big space where we, you know, are innovating internally today in terms of how we can, you know, sort of thread the needle there of creating something that is as simple, fast, and free to the degree possible for customers while, you know, we optimize things internally to make sure we have a sustainable business.
Yeah. And I think my takeaway over there is innovation is important, but we also need to know to prioritize. And there are areas where we need to say a no and we stay away and potentially prioritize those use cases, those functions or areas which will have a tangible ROI. And that's what you are trying to lead with you and your team. Is that a
yeah.
fair sort
Absolutely.
Of summary of how
yeah.
you?
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. So that said, now everyone's talking about Gen AI, Nick, right? Everyone's talking about Gen AI. And I want to bring another angle to this is, and I know this, although you can correct me, that one of the important days in a year for Pangea's Mother's Day, right? So I want to try to see how technology and that very important day because of large financial transaction, how are you integrating this technology in particular with some of those benefits you are taking to your customers, some of those important milestones? Is Gen AI playing a role? Will it play a role? Or is it just another, elephant in the room?
I think it will. I guess let me elaborate on some of the context you just described in terms of, us, this is a big day because, people send money to each other on a daily basis for all kinds of typically practical needs, paying bills and, all kinds of needs they have. Mother's Day represents a day that a lot of people, that use our product will send money to their mothers, as a gift at that time. And why that's particularly notable for us is it all happens in a very short time window, right? So, in terms of strain it puts on our systems, technical, operational, and so on, that's definitely a critical time for us. And, it's a time where we can see the connections, that are being made there for our customers. That's where you see that, you're not just seeing these opaque, nameless, soulless transactions kind of flowing through your system. You see that, these are people that are touching each other's lives in small but important ways. And then in terms of, how some of the technology factors into that, I think for us, this is still pretty early. I think even overall, industry-wide, in terms of AI, I think we're still in early phases here of where I think this is ultimately going to go. For us right now, we're not yet using this, I would say, in any big way for anything directly customer facing. I think that for us, the easier opportunities, to get into this first is around sort of things we use in our internal systems, right? So if you think about, how people interact with customers, it's a very typical thing you would see like in a call center or wherever, where internal information is sort of curated and optimized so that, you're essentially guiding humans that are making decisions internally, either in terms of how they deal with customers or analyze data internally. So I would say at this point, we haven't yet kind of made major investments in terms of how we directly interface in a way that customers directly see that. But definitely for us, where that frontier sits right now is around the area of what I mentioned around pricing, right? So for us, we, as much as we aim to optimize getting the best cost for everyone, that is a place that is getting, continued refinement, and applying AI to that space is something that, we're very much looking at this point.
I hear you. And I'm sure I and my viewers are also equally interested. Are you applying Gen AI in your personal life, in your professional also, not essentially, like, is it, we hear that it helps you in presentation, it helps you draft a better email faster. Are you tapping in any of it, or are you a proponent of it?
I would say at this point, I'm a relatively light user just myself. I would say I've definitely dipped my toes in there and use this for some fairly casual things, where I would say I am probably more in the space of watching the progressions and watching the types of problems that can be solved by it, and dabbling with them occasionally. I wouldn't say yet that this has made like a dramatic increase in my day-to-day productivity Although to be honest, I think it should. I definitely think I'm a bit behind in terms of how much I've let this seep into, you know, my day-to-day life. But I see it play out with other people. I definitely see it play out much more easily with younger generations of people that just like absorb this like a sponge and have run with it. So I would say have a ways to go myself.
Yeah, no, and agree with you. And my personal experience has been it involves a lot of unlearning. And like you said, the younger ones, the Gen Zs and Ys and Alphas, I think there's less of unlearning for them. And it's more of just being adaptive and improvising and moving on and just picking it up. Versus some of us who have to sort of unlearn the way we do and adapt this. But I think it's invariable. It will become part of our lives. The phones have now been, intelligent. They give you guidance as to what's the right thing, what's not the right thing. So I think it's a matter of time. This will be part of our daily lives as well, let aside the professional life of ours, Nick.
Well, you know, at some point it will ultimately disappear. Right. Like it'll become so prevalent it's invisible.
Yes.
I think that's the point where it becomes as true adoption, where you're using it all the time anyway, but you don't think of it as AI anymore. It's just a natural part of some other interaction.
Yes. No, agreed. On AI, I just want to I have one fundamental question on AI, especially generative AI. I've been reading a lot about engineering productivity, right? And how Gen AI is impacting that. And I don't want to take Fangio as an example, but your own, thought leadership on that topic, Forbes is talking about it. There are many articles written about it. The generative AI is impacting, and if not already, on improving engineering productivity, right? Whether it's on the QE side, whether it's on the dev side. What's your take on it, Nick?
Yeah, I think we've started using this a bit on the dev side. I think that you also see this play out, with a lot of developers that are also relatively younger, right? Like they take it for granted and they absorb it in a similar way that I just described of how, younger people in general absorb it more broadly. So this is something that, we've started to use, and we've seen some definitely anecdotal cases where, people get good use out of something like Copilot, for example, and there's many comparable products to that I think people use for a lot of their day-to-day tasks around software development. I think that my take on this is I'd love to see this play out for a little bit longer period of time, just so that I wouldn't say that I could point to exactly like how we've measured the improvements we get. We all know they're there. The people that use it day in and day out, view it as a no-brainer that they're getting productive gains out of this. I wouldn't say that it's bubbled up yet in terms of, I can't go to my CEO yet and say like, hey, we're shipping things to market 10% faster because of this. I'm not sure how well we'll get to a point where we can, really put some meaningful measurements around it, but you can't measure everything.
Yeah, and I think especially in your industry where security is so important, right? I think it's also going to play an important role as to how it sort of gets all the compliance, regulatory, and other things as well, right? As you, even if it's internal, maybe I'm sure there's an impact, and there will be that thing at the back of your mind as to, how much can you tap on it? But I'm sure, as you said, as things improve, as things, there's an advancement to it, I'm sure the adoption will also happen. On that topic, lastly, on technology, is there something new coming down the line? What's the future looking like, right? Right. So obviously some of this will advance, but, is there a Gen AI plus? Is there something else which is down the line which our viewers want to know that, hey, this is where the future is going to?
Well, that's a hard one. I think if I could tell you that reliably, I think I'd have a different job. I think it's interesting to reflect on how even the previous waves came about, right? I think that before the first mainstream version of ChatGPT came out, I think that was really the tipping point, right? Where this really started to take off for people. I think if you were, you know, to go back a year before that point in time, you know, obviously the people have been working on this for a very long time, but, you know, nobody saw that hockey stick growth that happened at that point. So I think there's always other frontiers that people are working on, but it's hard to see sometimes, you know, when you're going to get that type of growth. And then I think it's also interesting to see, like, are you going to sustain that growth, right? So, you know, no different than how previous waves of this have gone. You know, if you think of all the sort of the hype cycle that came with, you know, decentralized crypto, and, you know, long before that, the original sort of internet boom and all kinds of other, you know, cycles that have played out. You know, there's usually an overinflated cycle there. Some things people get very aggressive with and they try. Some of them fail. Many of them persist. And so the overall trend, you know, sticks and it takes. But there's definitely some casualties along the way. You know, You don't know exactly what's really going to stick. And so in that sense, you know, it's hard to say really what the next, you know, big wave will be. You know, definitely that's not like where I'm kind of focused on today. I can't say I'm really looking that far in the future.
Yeah, no, I agree, because sometimes we don't know what we don't know, right, at this point of time. But I think what I'm particularly sort of keeping an eye is how is this whole AI going to impact healthcare. I think that's a segment where, you know, we would see some advancements in terms of how healthcare in itself is going to evolve. And on the other side, how all of this is going to impact our environment, right? Because, you know, it's going to eat up a lot of resources, right? So your two cents on that?
Yeah, I think the environmental part, you know, is definitely a pretty substantial short-term problem. But I have to think that, you know, we're going to find way better ways, you know, to address some of that. You know, I think it's grown very quickly. And I think, you know, a lot of sort of energy consumption that you've seen, you know, has grown really dramatically, really in a, you know, short period of time. I would expect that to level off, and I would expect that to become a more manageable issue over time. I don't see that as a long-term threat, but definitely a short-term problem. Now, where it'll apply, I think, you know, the fundamental things you got to look around and see, you know, any place where you're looking at patterns and predictions, you know, are you know, these systems are all trained on previous patterns, and they make predictions based on what they see before. Like at the most basic level, that's what they all do. And, you know, you think of a space like healthcare, it's obvious that so much of what we do there, either in terms of on the diagnostic side or on, you know, development of new drugs and things like that, you can just see like really, really enormous potential there. I mean, obviously I don't work in that space, but just as a person who just watches everything in the industry, I mean, I would expect really, really massive gains on that in the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And at Movit, we have some of our engagements in those segments. So we're clearly seeing dollars being set aside to, you know, look at that and see how that advancement can be brought in. Nick, your professional career has been clearly impressive, and I'm sure myself and the audience learned so much about perspective, right? It's all about how you see technology improving, technology impacting. I want to know a little bit about yourself, right? What do you do outside work? What's your passion? I know you're an empty nester. A little bit about your family. So yeah. I'm sure all of us are very curious to know the other side of Nick.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, point you referenced, I have a couple older kids who are 20 and 22. So they're, you know, college age at this point. They've definitely out of the house, which has created a new, you know, interesting chapter, you know, for my wife and I. But it's also interesting, you know, to see, obviously, and, you know, when you have kids, you raise them, you go through a bunch of different chapters in that journey. It's super interesting to see them, you know, at this stage of life, you know, where they're just sort of learning who they are and who they want to be and what they want to pursue long term. And I think that it's always an interesting point where, you know, when you have younger kids, you're much more so guiding them, you know, keep them safe and all that. But as they become adults, right? I mean, they are going to pursue their own path. And, you know, at this point, you're providing guidance and everything, but you're not doing what you were doing when they were much younger. So it's always interesting to see, you know, how kids grow up and the people they become and the paths they choose and where they take things. It's, you know, definitely exciting to kind of like see the next generation and, you know, where they take things. I think we all have higher aspirations as a society of where the next generation is going to take all the advancements, you know, that we've seen play out over the previous generation. You know, beyond that, definitely it's, you know, having kids out of the house has definitely given me some time to pursue some other things that were always, you know, much more difficult, 10 years ago. You know, my wife and I definitely like to travel and go see new places. Definitely had a lot of time to pursue some other interests. You know, I think things outside of technology, you know, I would say have probably taken on a greater interest for me in the last few years. Really just more studying history, studying not just the history of technology, but also just, you know, human civilizations and observing how some of the things we're going through, you know, at a pretty rapid pace right now, have previous historical precedents and, you know, understanding how there was a world before we all got here, right, before we were all born, and just putting today's events and the future events into the context of, you know, our longer term, you know, history as people.
So does history repeat? Is it true with your few years of analysis? Do we see history repeating in a cycle or something?
I mean, not verbatim, right? But what is, I forgot who said it, you know, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. Right. You know, I think you see some of what is playing out now, let's say with Gen AI or what's played out, you know, more broadly with internet and all the advancements of the last 20 years. You can definitely go back to all the way back to like printing press and all kinds of other sort of information advancement, dissemination of information over, you know, various mechanisms. And how that's played out in society. I think that, you know, definitely what does repeat, I think you'll find is a lot of the sort of apprehensions that people have, a lot of the optimism that people have, those patterns tend to play out, you know, in somewhat similar ways. Because I think at the end of the day, you know, we're still humans, you know, humans of, you know, a few hundred years ago are mostly the same as they are today. Obviously our experiences are a bit different, but you know, at our core, I think we're the same.
Yeah. Nick, we are towards the end of the episode, and I'm sure our listeners would like to sort of hear some final words from you in terms of, you know, your professional takeaway, your personal lesson, any for the young guys, right? For the young, you know, engineers, for the young folks, and this would be, you know, broadcasted globally. So, you know, from other parts of the world, right? Who want to, you know, sort of, who are inspired by your journey and want to sort of see you as how they can be the next Nick, right? In wherever they are in their career. So any last thoughts on both your professional takeaway, a little bit of personal for the viewers?
I guess, you know, what I often tell people is to just, you know, have some context of where we all came from. And, you know, I mentioned before that we're kind of, you know, building on the shoulders of people who came and ideas that came before us. And just realize that, you know, there's much more we can do with all of this. You know, and not just in terms of technology, but as people and as a society. You know, I think that there's a basic human intent and the desire to kind of want to do more, want to do things better, both for ourselves as individuals and for society as a whole. You know, I think that there's the advancements of the world and individuals, I would say, over the next 20 years will definitely amaze us over, you know, what has come before us. And, you know, we're all a part of that, right? Everybody has a small contribution to that. And, you know, people should, obviously, we can all ride the wave, but I think we're all kind of making the next wave. So I think that everybody looking forward should feel like, you know, they're a small part of that.
And I think my two cents on that would also be live the moment as well, right? Things will move, things will
Oh, for sure.
progress, but you're gonna live the moment. You're gonna be happy and content in what we have, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise,
Well, I
it's all
mean,
like
life
the
is not
next
just
best.
about progress, right? I mean, you have to actually live your life. So, for sure.
Correct. Thank you so much being with us, Nick, today. We
Yeah,
appreciate
it's
your
my pleasure.
time, your insights. It's always a pleasure to meet you in person and to do this podcast with you, Nick.
Great. I definitely appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and do share your thoughts in the comments section. We can't wait to bring you the next episode, so stay tuned for more.